broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Today, the rest of my life has...
I didn't really do anything to deserve this. I said, like, I'm like a slut.
This one is just such an affront. So much out in the open.
I want three right now, just trying to get Grammy home from the airport.
When you're really ready to play, play Graham, Nevada.
It's 2 inches long.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where through the looking glass we go every night to places other talk shows wish they could go but cannot. Did a block of Tea Partiers help Bristol Palin with Dancing with the Stars tonight? Well, we'll have the results. What happened? Did she win? Did she lose? Was it her mother's influence? Was it not? We'll find out here this evening on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, if you missed it. An Ugly Betty actor. A young man who's been in other TV shows, decapitates his mother. Plus, the use of body scanners may expand to public transportation. Later on this evening, we'll have Bobby Dooley talking about a very interesting story here and something that's affecting them at the Homeowners Association as well as other neighborhoods. Cats, dogs, which animal is more intelligent? Dean Wheeler is going to join us this hour on weather in the Pacific Northwest. Wherever you are, it's been snowing up in the Northwest, snowing probably tomorrow through the those mountain states. And, hey, it's a colder year than average. And we've got snow on the Pacific Coast up in Oregon. So we'll check into that for you. Our affiliate spotlight tonight on WEUS 810 AM in Orlando. And a brand-new affiliate on Maui. That is KAOI 1110 AM Maui in the Hawaiian Islands. PhilHendryShow.com is our website. We invite you to join us and look at live streaming video of the show as well as listening to live streaming audio of the show, PhilHendryShow.com. We have a brand new Phil Hendry Classic Phil podcast up there for you, too, so check that out. With us tonight from Mill Valley in Northern California, from the Northern California Holistic Center, is Dean Wheeler. And, Dean, we've got snow, and it's a dangerous situation for people driving. We've got if you could just bear with me here, a vicious storm struck the Pacific Northwest and other western states at the start of the holiday traveling season, dumping heavy snow on roads, knocking out power to tens of thousands of people, and causing a cargo plane to overshoot its runway in Seattle. Now, we have a bit of audio here. This is, I believe, a reporter. Right, Jace? A reporter for local Seattle television, and it is ABC, actually, News. Neil Kalinske documenting his trip from a SeaTac International Airport back into the city of Seattle yesterday during this snowstorm.
It's hour three right now, just trying to get Grammy home from the airport. Still stuck on the road. I don't know. I mean, it could be another hour. It could be another 2 hours. Been on the road for 3 hours, most of the time going the same speed we're going right now, which is basically zero. And the roads are frozen all around us.
So, Dean, and I know they had a discussion when snow was falling earlier this year, about salting the roads.
Well, and here we have another heavy snowfall in the Northwest, Bill, and here we have more discussion of salting the roads. And I think most of your listeners... perhaps are not affected by snow this evening, and perhaps they don't live in an area where there is as much snow as may perhaps you get in the Northwest and other places, and so they are not familiar with how unnecessary salting roads really is. And it is so unnecessary because it is environmentally, we know in Seattle, the snow rolls down off the street, or the salt, rather, rolls down off the streets into Puget Sound. It then obviously interacts chemically with the waters of Puget Sound. There's a high mortality rate among the fish that are in the Sound there, primarily salmon, which are used commercially. But I'm not even talking about the commercial use of salmon, just the actual ecosystem, including the salmon, which are a part of the food chain for other animals like sea lions and so forth. And so we need to really make a promise to ourselves this year that we stop talking about salting the roads and panicking people. We don't need to.
Are you saying, and I don't live in a city where there's a lot of snow, are you saying that salting the roads, but I have lived in snow, and I've seen them salt the roads, and I know that it promotes the melting of ice. Are you saying it's not necessary? What makes it unnecessary?
Well, what makes it unnecessary is if that people were a little bit, if we demanded of people better control of their motor vehicles, we would eliminate one environmental threat, and that is the salting of our roads. If we demanded that people know a little more about the motor vehicles they're driving, do you see what I'm saying?
You're telling me that we don't need to salt the roads because people were they better drivers?
Yes, and everybody that I say this to, I talked last night to a group of senior citizens, and I said, and I had to put this the best way I could. I said, half of you are not going to be here next year.
And good Lord.
Well, I believe in talking very straight to people. I said, half of you are not going to be here next year. But of the half of you that won't be here next year, it will be because you don't know how to drive. I said, but the good news is, it doesn't make you any different from anybody else. The American people don't know how to drive. If they knew how to drive, we wouldn't have to salt our roads during the winter months or take any other precautions that we may take for inclement weather. Including putting on our flashers, turning on our headlights during heavy rainstorms.
One of the problems we have is that maybe we're not better drivers. We don't turn on our flashers or our headlights, you know.
No, but we don't need to turn on flashers or headlights if we are better drivers, but we aren't. And so in conjunction with all of this other nonsense, it has an environmental impact. It kills a part of our environment, the salt on the roads, goes into Puget Sound, and does such damage. And I said to my seniors last night that if you can make one promise to yourself between now and the time that you are no longer here, I said, or if we see each other next year.
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Yes.
That's an awfully... Isn't that a cruel thing to say to older people? Half of you won't be here next year.
Well, but you see, with the weather the way it is, and the snow coming down the way it is, and the fact that we know how people drive, and even salting the roads is not going to be enough to keep many of our seniors alive. Salting the roads won't be enough to keep a lot of the rest of us alive. The time is for us, Al Phil, to start to learn how to drive. So I said to my seniors last night, make a promise to yourself between now and whenever, if I see you next year or not, that you're going to learn how to drive an automobile the best way you can so we can stop using salt on our streets that eventually rolls into places like the Puget Sound and destroys an entire body of the ecosystem, salmon and other fish. Don't do that because you don't want to know how to drive and because you figure you'll get away with it. And that was one other thing I said to them, and I think there's a lot of seniors listening to me who agree. Most seniors don't learn how to drive better because they feel that if they wind up in an automobile accident that, God forbid, takes a human life, they're not really going to be punished as much as the rest of us.
Well, you're attributing to senior citizens a whole lot of instinct there, that they don't want to learn how to drive because there's going to be they're going to get off easy. The fact is, we all should learn how to drive, is what you're saying. But you're saying that if we did, we wouldn't need to salt our roads. And I'm here to tell you that I have lived in ice and snow. I've lived in Minnesota. I lived in the southeast where there was a great deal of snow in Atlanta when I lived there. And without a salted road, you are on ice, my man, and you're on, in some instances, black ice, and your car is no longer under your control.
No, that's not true. That is not true. If you knew how to drive, you'd know how to negotiate an automobile on ice. This is not brain surgery. most people are frightened to death of driving on ice. I understand that. And perhaps it's laziness, perhaps it's a mental block or an emotional problem, but they don't want to learn.
Well, you tell me how to drive on ice. Okay, I was in Minnesota the very first night it snowed. I got out of the radio station. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I went across the street. I got my car. I pulled out of the parking lot. I'm in downtown Minneapolis at 2 a.m. It has just snowed. And here comes my very first red light, and I'm sliding sideways up to the red light.
Because you don't know what you're doing. You have no idea what you're doing.
And Tell me how.
Well, did you eventually learn?
I eventually learned to take it a lot easier. I eventually learned...
No, you don't. It has nothing to do with speed. Driving on ice safely has nothing to do with speed. It has to do with getting your car started in the right direction, for starters. You can't be a few degrees to the left or a few degrees to the right. When the car is pointed in the right direction, and you know that you want to stop, the first thing you do is downshift, and pump the brakes once. You have to take your hands off the wheel. You downshift with your hands off the wheel. Okay?
No, all right.
You downshift.
I'm downshifting with my hands off the wheel.
Take your hands. Make sure the car is going in the right direction. Take your hands off the wheel. Downshift. Pump the brakes once with your hands off the wheel. And this is the mistake most everyone makes. I have to control the car. I have to have my hands on the wheel. Because you don't know how to stop at a red light. We're destroying I don't know how many thousands of salmon this year in Puget Sound. It is so wasteful. And the elderly people that I spoke to last night, I said to them, half of you won't even be here next year. Will you please learn how to drive? Will you please? And you know what they did? They came up to me after the talk and shook my hand and said, thank you. It was a wake-up call.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're on with Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center. If we knew how to drive in ice and snow, we wouldn't need to salt our roads. And Dean said that most of us don't know how to drive on ice, and the way to drive on ice is, he said that you take your hands off the wheel when you're downshifting and then popping the brakes and then put your hands on a wheel as long as you're going in the right direction. Now, I lived in Minneapolis for a year. And I lived in one of the, and it was through one of the worst winters they'd had. It was what they call one of those 100-year winters. It was cold, man. It was 60, 70 below some days. And I tell you, I never took my hands off the wheel. But if we learned how to drive in this condition, would we need to salt the roads? And therefore, would, like Puget Sound, would the salmon be dying? 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Dean Wheeler of the Northern California Holistic Center. Obviously, a man concerned with the environment. Next hour, it's Bobby and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
You completely misrepresented what I just said.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center. We're talking about the weather. It's Thanksgiving time. People are on the roads, and we have snow in the Pacific Northwest. We have snow back east. We will have snow in the mountain states tomorrow, and people on the roads. Now, I know that you... And there are others who are opposed to salting the roads, especially salting the roads in Seattle, because the salt gets into the sound.
You know, and not only that, Phil, but the salt will get into the food supply of the sea lions and the harbor seals that are part of the ecosystem in the sound, as well as the salt eventually does get over to a place like Bainbridge Island, where there's a property cost, there's property value.
All right, but to just clarify, you believe that we don't need to salt our roads, we need to learn how to drive better, and to drive better, that means driving better on ice, that there's no salt needed.
No, not if you know how to negotiate ice. Now, you've told me, I've heard a lot of people...
Well, let me ask you, you drive regularly on ice? You live in San Francisco, you don't, you know...
No, I do live in San Francisco, Phil, but my in-laws live in Denver, Colorado, and we drive there... every, I'd say every 4 months. And so I have driven in ice, I've driven in snow, and I know how to do it. And first of all...
do you have a four-wheel drive?
No, I do not. No, I do not. I have a regular two-wheel drive car, but I know how to do it. First of all, over-control of the car is... If you over-control the car, you can begin to scribble your epitaph right there on using your wife's lipstick or whatever you have, because there's no point in driving anymore. You're going to die.
What do you mean by over-control?
By putting both hands on the wheel and grabbing it tightly and trying to control what the automobile has already decided it's going to do, and that is slide to one side, slide to the other. Now, if you are sliding and the front end is going left, what do you do?
You turn left.
You turn left. But you also do one thing that no one talks about. You have to have that car door open. Because if the automobile goes into a full spin and you see traffic bearing down on you, there's one other thing you need to do. You've got to get out of that car. So you need to turn it left, swing that door open. If there's traffic coming, you need to exit the vehicle the best way you know how. Either jump, do two full rolls, and there were a great deal of videotapes.
All right, 877-877-877-6-PHIL. Jumping from an automobile.
Would you rather be in the car when it's hit by a gasoline tanker? Philly. Let's be serious.
All right, 877-876-PHIL on the line with me, Dean Wheeler, and let's take a phone call. Here we have Joseph in Boston listening on WTKK. Hello, Joseph. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
How you doing?
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to comment on the situation that we have here with, especially the recent comment of opening the car door. I'd really like to understand why that would be necessary.
Well, I indicated that if you see traffic bearing down on you, while your car is 360 degrees in the middle of an interstate, and there is traffic coming at you full speed, staying in that vehicle is basically you're staying in a can that's about to enter a garbage compactor.
Well, I know that cars are designed for impact zones, and they're designed to take the stresses. They're engineered that way to protect you. The human body can't take a full-size truck hitting it. The body's not designed to take that impact. I would stay in the vehicle where it's safe.
Good for you. All right. Well, you do what you need to do.
Have you ever had a jump from a vehicle?
But, Dean, you're not going to do that, huh?
I would not, no.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Thanks for your call. Here is Eric on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, that comment about that you just take your hands off the wheels and pump the brakes is incorrect.
Yeah. Well, you pump it once. You don't pump the brakes a lot. You pump it once.
So let me tell you why. I'm a professional truck driver. I've driven in all 48 continental states. I've been driving for 20 years.
Are you a Teamster?
I'm sorry?
Are you a Teamster? Are you a union member?
Am I a union member?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
No, I am not a union member.
Well, that's sort of, you know.
Well, wait a minute. The man has driving experience.
No,
well,
I have 20 years of driving experience.
You take your hands off that wheel.
You take the hands off that wheel and you pump that brake even just one time, you are going to go into a slide no matter what.
I'm sorry
it never happened to you. But let me tell you an example. Last year, Nebraska had a pretty bad...
What is it with you and union?
Yeah, the man's not a union driver. I don't know whether I want to...
Let's listen to the gentleman, please. Eric, go ahead.
Okay, last year, I was coming through Nebraska. Okay, I was going 3 miles an hour. 3 miles an hour. It had high winds coming through Nebraska. Okay,
right.
I was completely empty. Because they did not ice the roads, that wind pushed me and jackknifed my truck.
I know, but you're not a union driver, and I'm wondering if you knew what to do. And
I've been driving for 20 years.
You see what I mean? You see what I mean?
I have over a million miles of driving experience.
Were you on ice at the time that the car
jumped? Yes, I was on black ice.
Ice, all right.
Because when I got out of that
truck, shows that you need to have more driving experience.
All right. Listen, Eric, thank you, and I appreciate you. 877-876-PHIL. Please, Dean, give my callers respect. We'll be back with Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I got Dean Wheeler on the line, and Dean, we got a dangerous situation out there. We have snow, and we have ice, and we have black ice, and you're saying that we should not salt the roads because of the salmon in Puget Sound. I understand that.
Well, hold on for a minute. The tone of your voice and the tone fill up a lot of people who are anti-environment.
I'm not anti-environment.
Please. This is a critical feature. There is a disdain when I say that we could save the lives of salmon if we don't salt these roads. There is a disdain in your voice, and there is in other people's voices. And that disdain says that you think this pursuit is silly, childish, effeminate. I am asking that people, if you will, exert some masculinity, exert some strength, and learn how to drive their automobiles on snow and on ice. That man, who was not a union truck driver, so I don't know where he gets off telling me how to drive my car when you pump the brakes one time. A lot of times. And you put a non-union driver on.
Well, the non-union, union, whatever. The man's driven for 20 years, okay?
Well, he's non-union. I drove by a non-union truck one time, one Thanksgiving. It was one of the local supermarkets. I knew it was non-union because they were on strike, and the truck was in a ditch. And there was no snow, no ice.
The two things you said here was that you will pump the brakes for the black ice with your hands off the wheel, both in downshifting and pumping the brakes. No hands on the wheel. And then 360... get ready to jump out of the car.
That is correct, yes. And the driving instructor driving instructor from Boston had no real argument against it. In fact, I would not even take driving instruction from that man. It sounded like he was half asleep.
Well, your whole argument is to jump out of the car in case you see a car or some large vehicle bearing down on you.
That is correct. That is correct. Thank you. Thank you. I did say that, and you repeating it the way I said it, that's correct.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Here is J.D. on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, J.D.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Very good, sir. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. You say if the car turns a 360 and you open the door and you're going to jump out. Correct?
That is it's a precaution. It's a precautionary move, yes, sir.
Okay. But you're saying that's a precaution. But if you jump out, okay, are you not in line of all these cars coming at you?
No, not if you choose the right moment. Obviously, you want the car between you and the traffic that's bearing down on you.
So I'm jumping out when my car is... You're jumping out of the car when the car is what?
I just said, when the car is between you and the gasoline tanker that's bearing down on you.
Do you think that the gasoline tanker is not going to push that car right over you?
Well, hopefully you're not jumping out at the last second. Hopefully what you're doing is you're looking and seeing I have, you know, and you count it down. One, two, three, how many car lengths do you have? Okay. Look at your watch, get your bearings, and then make the leap.
I'm totally confused because I know that if I jump down on the black ice, I'm not going to have any traction, and I'm not going to be able to get up and run away.
You're jumping out of the car, and you're going to be getting away from a car that's about to be hit. I'm sorry that that's difficult, but you can see, Phil, people are not familiar with what I'm saying. They're so used to having ice on the road and so used to having all of this done for them.
Well, I mean, what the man is saying, and J.D., if you jump out of a car, where are you going to land? Where are you going to wind up?
You're going to wind up away from a car that's about to be set on fire by gasoline. Isn't that good enough? Is that good enough for you? It's good enough for me.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is, let's go over to Carol on the Phil Hendry Show. Carol, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, are you a union member?
No, I'm not in a union. I don't drive, drive professionally. I don't drive professionally.
Then what makes you an authority? If you have to be a union member to know how to drive, then what makes you an authority?
Because I know. I mean, I know a doctor is a good guy to go to be cured. Am I a doctor? No. You know. So, but I do know union drivers are, you know, unless you don't know that. Do you know that you can go to a doctor to get, are you aware of that?
Do what?
You are aware that. Are you aware that doctors have medicine?
Oh, really? No, I didn't realize that. You know what? You don't have to be
I guess you have to. I guess you have to. I guess you have to be a. I guess you have to be a doctor to know that.
No,
what
you need
a dumb.
Oh, let's not. Let's not call people dumb.
You just said the dumb. You said the dumbest thing I ever heard.
No, you are the dumbest thing I've ever heard because you make no sense.
Sure.
Being a union driver does not make you a superior driver. You are an idiot. Are you a union driver? No, I'm not proclaiming you a driver. What makes you an authority? Union drivers are superior. What makes you an authority? Well, you're not an authority.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on for a minute. You're saying, Dean, are you in a union to that guy?
Yeah.
And you're saying that if he's in the union, that he knows what he's talking about. If he's not in the union...
If he's not in the union, I'm saying what he's saying is suspect. It's like going to a doctor that had his license pulled. Would you really want to go and have a...
You are stupid. It's like going to a back alley abortionist.
It's like going to a back alley abortionist.
Why is this guy on the radio? Because he doesn't even make sense. He's like...
For the same reason. Well, if you're on the radio, then I can be on the radio. You make a lot of sense than I do.
I'm not a guest. I called in.
That's right. I am the guest, and I'm the authority.
You're on there because you know nothing.
Because I know more about it than you do.
You're going to get people killed.
Oh, really?
Oh,
here you are. You're talking about staying in a car that's spinning around.
What's
that?
You want to get people killed? Because that's what you're doing.
What are you practicing for a hog calling contest? Hello.
What is that?
Well, it sounds like she's talking to the uncle.
There you go.
You cannot even let anybody get a word in.
I can't because you won't shut up.
I'm shutting up.
Okay, so we go to trial. You're jumping out of the car in black eyes.
Hold.
You're so rude.
You know what, Dean? Dean, shut up.
Well, she's doing a hot call.
Hold on. Go ahead, Carol.
No, but your guest is so rude. You need to take him off the radio because you're going to lose a lot of listeners by having him on.
Why don't you get to the point?
God.
To the point, but I can't because you're stupid and you won't shut the freaking crap up.
I'm shut up.
Okay, so when we try your little jumping out of the car on black eyes and we get smashed, so do we need to sue you? Do we need to sue you because we took your advice and we... Does our state get to see you because we're dead? Because we took your advice and we got killed? What are you talking about? So that's you breaking
wind, and that's your way of showing you have class?
What?
I just heard the rudest noise. That's what I heard. What was that?
I can't understand anything you're saying.
I heard you break wind.
No, you heard me. Go off the side of the road, you rude person.
I heard a fart. Excuse me.
No, you did not.
Let me ask you something. if you die, you're not following my...
And it went off...
Whoa. Got to watch the language there. Watch the language. Dean, final point.
I'm just saying, if she follows my advice, if she dies, she didn't follow my advice. If she's alive, she did.
If she dies, she didn't follow your advice. If she's alive, she did. All right, thank you. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dean Wheeler on the line with us here as we talk about the snowstorms, driving in the snow, driving on the ice, driving on the, you know, on all of this bad stuff. And essentially what we are talking about is black ice and the fact that we don't need salt. Now, everyone knows that salt has been used to get rid of ice.
Yes, it has. And why? Because people don't want to learn how to drive on ice. I've been trying to tell them, but you can hear that there is a built-in, I don't know what you would call it, Phil, there is just a built-in reaction against having to learn how to drive better. Drive around in America and see what you find. You find bad drivers. Do we want to get better? No. We'd rather have the road salted. That kills salmon. We wind up driving on roads that kill salmon. I think if we can learn how to drive on ice...
Yeah, I hear all of your philosophy, but what you're saying is you have this experience driving on ice where you have to pump the brakes and you have to jump out of the car, and the union driver is the better driver. What you're doing here is antagonizing people, and my question is why?
No, fair and Mr. Henry, I think the record shows very clearly that this last woman called me names, and I'm sorry, and then broke the loudest gas.
She said she had driven over some rough concrete.
Yes, of course she did. Uh-huh. Right.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Dan in Houston. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, sir. Okay. This is pretty comical, Phil. I've been driving since I was 8 years old. I grew up in the Ozark Mountains, Branson, Missouri, to be exact, where we have ice storms. We don't have snowstorms. We have 6 inches of ice on the ground, and I grew up on the ice. The last thing you're going to do on ice is pump your brakes, and the very last thing you're going to do after that is jump out of the dumb car. You know, I mean...
Can you tell me, sir, what is an ice storm exactly? You have snow. Well, what do you mean by an ice storm? Ice is coming down.
It starts sleeting, and about 20 minutes later, you get a layer.
That's called snow. Now, the other thing is...
That's called what?
It's called snow when it sleets. That's basically snow.
Well, no, it isn't. It's frozen rain.
It's the ice on the ground.
Right. It's coming out of the air. It was out of the air. It was snow. When you commit genocide against salmon, because the American driver needs
salmon,
to have their...
Salmon? What's salmon got to do with driving on ice, dude?
Because we're using salt. Oh, God, will you listen? Oh, God, will you listen? When we drive on...
He's saying...
When you drive on... When they all salt the roads, the salt goes into Puget Sound. And it is mass slaughter. Jesus. Okay, fine. Do you eat canned salmon?
I don't know.
You're a lion.
What's salmon got to do with it, Phil?
I just told you, you clueless.
Let's take a break. I lost call screening. So let's thank you very much, Dan. You're a good man for calling. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. Wow. We'll be back with more from Dean Wheeler here as we talk about how to drive on the ice on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Dean Wheeler has joined us from the Northern California Holistic Center. You know, Dean, you're not even a weather guy. You don't strike me as a global warming expert. I know you're interested in the environment.
Well, I'm interested in the environment the way all of us should be interested in the environment from the standpoint of our planet surviving. My whole issue with salt on the highways is that it eventually becomes a hazard in our environment. In Seattle, I mentioned the salmon in Puget Sound. there is wholesale, the wholesale extermination of a species is going on. If that's all right with people, I guess that's okay with me. And nothing I have said tonight, I said pump the brakes once. Don't pump the brakes like you're in a bumper car. Pump them once and make sure your hands are off the wheel as you just glide along.
As you glide along and hope you stop.
No, you're going to stop. When your car spins to the left or to the right, turn into that spin. But yes, make sure you have some... I think it only makes sense that you've got some way of getting out of that car. Have the door open. When you jump, roll twice, and then jump up and keep running. And that's what that gentleman would not allow me to finish. You go... You get out of it, you jump from the car, roll on your side once, twice, leap up, you'll land in a running position, and run. But he didn't want me to say that.
You jump out of the car, you're rolling.
You roll twice.
Roll twice, and then when you leap up, you're in a leaping...
You're in a running position.
In a running position. 877-876-PHIL.
And I know that there are people, because they're not familiar with what I'm talking about, they will dismiss it outright. And I think it's a... I think it's a tragedy.
Antoinette in Chattanooga. Hi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show, Antoinette, with Dean Wheeler. Go ahead.
How you doing, Phil?
Very good, ma'am.
I'm listening to Dean, is his name? I'm a professional truck driver. I've been driving for approximately 10 years.
Are you union?
Yes. And
you are union, okay.
Hello?
Yes, are you a Teamster?
Okay, I'm currently driving now. I'm on my way taking a load. I just left North Dakota. And I'm listening to him say he's going to jump out of a car on black ice if a gasoline truck is bearing down on him.
I don't want to be in the car when it hits, no. Why would I want to be in the car?
Well, if a gasoline truck is bearing down on you and it hits a patch of black ice, 9 out of 10, that truck trailer is going to jackknife. So you jumping out is just going to make the trailer roll over you. Even better.
Well, the trailer
roll
is
not... And then jump up on your feet. And that doesn't happen even... Not that well in the movie.
I didn't hear when you said, Antoinette, whether you were a union driver or not. I didn't hear your response.
No, I'm not a union driver.
Aha! That's number two tonight. You see, when you're not a union driver...
All right, we're not going to use that excuse. All right, so, Antoinette, because Dean feels that if you're not a union driver, you don't know what you're talking about. And I don't want to use that excuse. Let's just take her experience at face value, can we?
Well, I didn't take the other man's experience.
I've been driving for 10 years, so I don't understand what I was talking about.
Well, but you see, if you're not union, you don't understand. What I was saying, Antoinette, was this. First of all, it's my car that's spinning. I look in the rearview mirror as it's spinning, and I'm checking my watch. I've got 1, 2, 3. Okay, roll. Now, what am I doing? I realize I've lost control of the car. I open the door. I look, and I see the truck. 2, 3, 4, roll. And I'm out of the car. 2 rolls. You pop up, and you begin to run. Now, you say that that is not going to happen. I don't understand.
What Antoinette said is...
Please, Mr. Henry, allow the lady to speak for herself. Don't be sexist. Antoinette?
Okay, I'm here.
Yes.
Okay, what I'm trying to tell you is, Mr. Dean...
Yes, ma'am.
If a tractor-trailer hits a patch of black ice, and you think you have all this time in the world to count and open your door and jump out and roll twice and land on your feet and start running, it doesn't happen that way. It's not going to happen that way.
Have you ever done it?
Excuse me?
Yes. Have you ever done the 2-roll leap?
Oh, no, I'm not jumping out of a moving car.
Well, then I dare say you don't know.
Only a crazy person would jump out a moving car.
You're talking about, Dean,
unless
you're saying...
a person absolutely had to save their life from a killer.
A gasoline tanker.
The car.
So I stay inside the car and allow myself to be barbecued because I listen to you, Antoinette. And what do they find at Dean Wheeler? Enough to put it in an ashtray.
What you do, you don't pump your brakes on some black ice because that's going to make your car go out of control even faster.
All right, but I still think I've listened to you, but you have not addressed, have you ever done the two-roll leap? No, you haven't. I have practiced it.
Have you ever leapt from a car?
At the end of that track, the trailer is going to run over you irregardless.
We don't know that. We don't know that. We can't see into the future. Perhaps the driver maintains control long enough for the rig itself, the tractor, to go into the car. And if the trailer does go out of control, maybe there's a bridge. I'm leaping into a river or leaping away. Diving into a river or I don't know.
No.
Diving into a river. So now you're leaping out of the car, roll, leap up, and dive.
Yes. If you leap up and you see you're over a river, then dive.
Mr. Field.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't talk about me like I'm not here.
Well, we do have to take a break. And I thank you very much, though, Antoinette. You've been a great caller. And Dean, 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show, coming up, Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley on the cats and dogs in the neighborhood.
No, you do it too.
Phil Hendry.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
As this was becoming a bullying thing, that should have come boom and taken care of.
The rest of my life.
All right, so it's hour five right now. I'm moving 0 miles.
But now they want the government to show them our genitalia.
Thank you, man. Famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. That's a unique thing, I personally think. Truth is our bitch, and through the looking glass, we go every night to take you places other talk shows wish that they could, but they can, baby. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. The Pacific Northwest continues to be hit with a wicked snowstorm. Staying with us this hour to answer your questions and take your comments is Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center. And Mr. Wheeler has combined safe driving with a love of the environment. This salt in the Northwest that is used, for instance, in Seattle, has been marked or targeted by environmentalists as bad for the Puget Sound, the marine life in the Puget Sound, specifically salmon. And so, therefore, is a very destructive element to be using in getting rid of ice on these icy streets in the Northwest during the wintertime. And there are other cities across this country. Just practically every American city uses those that have snowstorms and have to deal with this problem. They use salt. So Dean has said that we have to become better drivers. And we're, you know, in a little bit of an interesting conversation with him about that. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Mr. Wheeler is on the line with us from Northern California, and we continue with our discussion here. Dean, before we get to our phone, some more of our phone calls, you heard me lay out essentially what your argument is. And when you talk about ice, black ice, and the inability of Americans to drive on it, and you say it's because we aren't good drivers, you've just heard two truck drivers, innumerable people saying that not only is it unsafe to drive on, but the advice you're giving about take your hands off the wheel, downshift while your hands are off the wheel.
That's right.
And then pump the brakes once, and the car will glide into the right direction. You haven't told me anything about how it's going to slow down. And then jumping from the car.
Let me interrupt you, Phil, and I'm going to say something here that I don't mean to be sarcastic. I'm being very serious. I know you know that it snows in Europe, but I have to tell you, in speaking to some of your callers this past hour, I'm not so sure they know. For instance, that snow comes down in Europe. Why am I saying that?
Yeah, why are you saying that?
I'll tell you why I'm saying that. Because the Autobahn, which is the fastest freeway in the world, people travel on the Autobahn in speeds excess of 180 miles an hour. You know that there is snow in Europe. You know that there's black ice in Europe. And yet, the German Autobahn, people have been driving at breakneck speeds on for years and years and years. I just saw a program here where they showed the man driving on the Autobahn, and he was going so fast, they have high-speed rail. I think, Phil, what's going on here with a lot of your listeners, they don't want to admit that they don't have full control or a real full mastery of driving an automobile. And I have to tell you, I think that that's what is at the very heart of this.
You're talking about the Autobahn in Germany, right?
Yes. That is a freeway upon which people can go as fast as they want. And it doesn't make any difference if there's black ice. It doesn't make any difference.
Well, no one's going to drive 180 miles an hour on black ice.
You don't know that. You haven't driven on the Autobahn. There's not an American driver that has experience enough to advise, let alone critique, a German driver. They drive on the Autobahn, and they know what they're doing. There are a number of things, Phil, when you are in the middle of for instance, hydroplaning on water. What do you do? Americans don't know. How do you get out of a situation like that? Americans don't know.
How do you get out of hydroplaning?
Well, when you're hydroplaning, the first thing you do is to make sure, do I have control of the car by way of the steering wheel? Do I have brakes? So when you begin to hydroplane, pump the brakes. If they're not there, try the steering. If they're not there, you need to begin to move your body up and down, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to shift the weight or the center of gravity of the car. That's if you're alone. If you are with someone, you ask them to get into the back seat. So they will move their weight to the back seat. If you are with a child or an infant and you see a snowbank or anything that looks like it might be soft enough for you to be able to eject that.
You're not talking about throwing a baby or a child from the car, are you?
I'm certainly not suggesting you keep a baby or a child in an automobile that has a date with hell, a date with gnashing metal, screeching tires, and fire. No, I don't suggest you keep the child in that car.
So you're going to take a baby. Now, I want to be clear here. You're taking an infant. This is while I'm hydroplaning, okay?
Yes, I understand. And, Mr. Hendry, your attempt at making these things dramatic.
Dean, I'm not trying to make it dramatic. If I am evidencing shock, I'm hydroplaning. The first thing I need to do is figure out whether I have brakes or steering.
That is correct.
All right. If I have neither, now you're saying I need to move my body. What do you mean?
Just pop up and down in your seat as you're going up and down, because what you're trying to do is get that center of gravity. If that doesn't help, if the car is still veering this way and that, then have the passenger get in the back seat. If you have children, no shifting of the weight is going to help there. You have to eject them from the car onto a soft snowbank. Now, if there is no one in the car with you, then pop your body up and down. If the car is still out of control, then lay flat on the seat, on your stomach. Hold on to the door in front of you with your hands and hook your feet into the door behind you. Because what's going to happen is the car is now out of control, and the car is going to begin to flip and tumble and I don't know what. You want to make sure the doors stay on. So that's why you're holding on to both doors, one with your feet, the other with your hands. So when the car begins to get airborne, the first thing it's going to want to do is lose its doors. Because of the air pressure. It is not a problem. Again, just two words for you. Autobahn. If you think what I'm saying is crazy, Autobahn.
877-876-PHIL. I don't know about the Autobahn. I really don't. 877-876-PHIL. Where are we going, man? Gary in Yakima. Gary, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Dean Wheeler. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing?
Yes, sir. Very good.
Yes, my name is George, not Gary. It's George.
Okay.
Anyway,
sorry.
My thing is this. If you're concerned about the environment, I think a human life is more important than salmon. If it's snowing on the ground or the roads, it will slow down to protect the human being, not the salmon.
I understand that, but the human beings can protect themselves by learning how to drive better.
Well, I agree with you as far as learning how to drive better, but what I'm saying is you need to learn how to drive better, and at the same time, it's a positive perspective. And you're talking about hooking your leg and laying down. When you're in the hydroplane, you ain't got time to think and do all that stuff. That's ridiculous.
Well, I don't know. I beg your pardon? I don't know what you mean. I don't have time. You're hydroplaning, so you have to try everything.
Well, you've got people. You're saying throwing kids out of the car.
No, I'm saying if there's a soft snowbank, if there is an area where you can eject the infant onto a soft snow.
You're talking about throwing an infant out of a car and then laying flat, holding on to the doors.
Yes, when the car becomes airborne.
That's crazy.
Sir, you can laugh. But last year, we had thousands of deaths on our highways. Okay? We had thousands of deaths on our highways, and we had billions of salmon die in Puget Sound. There was death everywhere, and we did nothing about it.
I'm talking about the human life.
Yes, well, the human life. And if you're laughing about me trying to hold...
Yeah?
Well, he's laughing about me trying to hold the doors on a car. What's funny about that?
Why would you need to hold the doors onto the car? You're telling me that the air pressure...
Oh, boy, you guys... I'm glad you're enjoying the fact that human beings are going to die by the bushel this Thanksgiving.
Mr. Phil Henry.
No, I don't enjoy that at all. Yes, sir.
I want to let you know that I appreciate listening to you. I listen to you every day, come home from work. I'm a retired Marine coming from Cherry Point. Your thought show is very entertaining. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Audrey on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Audrey.
You know, you want people to jump out of vehicles. You want people to throw babies out. People that have 80,000 pounds underneath them as a truck driver and even in a car, and you want them not only to put themselves at risk, but millions of other people that are driving down that road.
If the car is out of control, how am I, what do you want me to do with an out of control car?
You use that thing that's called a brain,
exactly,
that you say you're such
doing
a scientist. No, listen, you
I'm
say
doing.
You're such a scientist. That means that you need to use your brain instead of something to hide your hair with. Seriously.
Exactly.
You have
no idea.
You live in California. How many Californians have to drive on ice? Seriously.
Excuse me.
Are you kidding?
We have mountains in California. Are you that much of a moron that you don't think we have snow in California? That's
a
better question.
Because
you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You don't know anything about snow. Yes, that's right.
You're going to hold a door, throw an infant baby out, just because what? Because you feel like it?
Audrey wants to keep the baby in the car so the baby can incinerate in the car along with Audrey. That's what she wants to do. I may be an idiot, but I don't want to murder children, and
you
I don't want to murder a baby. And for you,
you're
going to keep the baby in the car. You're keeping the baby in the car so that when the car is hit by a gasoline tanker, the car explodes, and you've got one barbecued kid, which I guess you think is funny. I don't. That's the difference between you and me.
I don't think a barbecue infant is funny.
You're an idiot. No, I have a college
degree. You don't need to drive. Trust me.
I have a college degree.
I have a doctorate. You don't need to drive. I would have your license revoked. Because you are an idiot.
You don't have enough power. You don't have enough power.
You are an idiot.
You can't.
You are stupid.
You have no power over me.
You ain't got enough brains.
You know what? I got it. You are pathetic.
I have a master's degree in global science.
Don't put no salt on the road. Let everybody hide your plane around and fly.
We should put salt on the road.
Did you hear what she said?
Hold on.
Oh my God!
You want to put soap on the road? Did you hear what this idiot said? She wants to soap the road. What does that mean? What an idiot! What an idiot!
Okay, I've heard that word enough here, all right?
Well, she's an idiot.
Well, we'll look at doctor. You're making it sound like you're a doctor.
I have a master's degree.
All right, you got a master's degree, and you're telling people you throw an infant out of a car.
No, Phil, we'll keep the infant in the car so that when the fireball hits the cockpit of the car, we all cook together. Jeez. That's what Audrey wants to do because she's into that kind of fall guy stuff.
All right. Now
that's what you want to do. You watch too much. You read too many comic books.
All right, Audrey. Thank you for your call. And Dean, hang on the line. Speaking of comic books, I mean, when you say that I'm going to lay flat on the seat, hold the door, hook the door behind the seat, so the first thing the car's going to want to do when it gets airborne is lose the doors. 877-876 Phil, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on number 877-876 Phil, as we talk about the snow, the traffic that we're going to be certainly encountering, the traffic conditions, and all of this with Mr. Dean Wheeler, who is, for the most part, a holistic healer, a man who's into homeopathic science. You're not really a traffic scientist. You're not a civil engineer, sir. You are concerned with the environment. But you're telling people how to drive on black ice, and all of this is what?
All of this, Phil, springs from my concern from the environment. And what you are saying, and a lot of your listeners, is that if you have a love of the environment, if you have a love of life, if you appreciate this world, and you want it to be a little bit of a better world, then you had best not come to the table to discuss anything other than that, because you have no right. Everything, the word holistic means whole. Everything is connected with everything else. Driving is connected to the environment, salt. Salt connected to the marine life. Marine life, obviously salmon. And this is a food source. If we learned how to drive better, I put down, I'm always making notes on what to do. And I said that if you're hydroplaning, why not think of these things?
Well, when you say that the car's going to be airborne, based on what?
Excuse me, based on the fact that you're hydroplaning, and the car is now, for all intents and purposes, beyond your control. You need to lay down, pull the car around you, make sure the doors don't come off, because the first thing a car that is airborne wants to do is lose its doors, and then the tires. The car is coming apart in the air. You don't need that. You don't want that. That's not a good time for anyone that's in that car.
All right, 877-876 Phil. Here is Steve in Providence listening to us on WSAR. Steve, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, I'm a mechanic of 10 years, and I'd like to point out a few flaws with Mr. Dean's advice. The first thing that kind of caught my ear was he's mentioning.
Uh-huh.
Let go of the steering wheel. Under no circumstances does that seem like a good idea. And his whole theory of...
Well, if the car is not... If you're not able to control the car, what's the point?
Well, I'd have to ask you, what year vehicle do you drive?
Oh, I drive a Neon. A 99 Neon.
99 Neon. Well, most vehicles, I'd say 99% of them, after 1990, are equipped with anti-lock brakes. And what that does is that maintains steering of the vehicle when the wheels are sliding or losing traction.
There you go.
So,
there you go.
So while you're hydroplaning, the wheels are pulsating, the brakes are pulsating, applying the brakes and releasing them at so rapid rate that it allows you to maintain partial steering.
Yes, but the point being that if you don't have either, then what? See, that's what I was going for, the worst-case scenario.
If you don't have anything, leaving the vehicle is a horrible idea.
I didn't say leave your vehicle when you're hydroplaning. Leave your vehicle when you are in a 360 and you are about to be hit by a vehicle with flammable fluid.
Okay, well, hydroplaning now.
Fluid. Uh-huh.
And,
you know, you're a mechanic.
Can
I ask you a question? You fix cars. What is that? You don't drive them. You fix them.
To bring the vehicle into the air?
Well, you said you're a mechanic, so that means that you're a mechanic. It's not an airplane, sir. You're a mechanic. You sit and fix cars. You're not a... Are you a race driver?
I know the forces that act on cars, and there's no forces on the highway.
The forces that act on cars?
A large hill that would cause the car to go airborne. It's not just going to raise up into the air.
What do you mean the forces that act on cars? This is not a metaphysical... spiritual?
You have gravity, air.
Gravity,
you
yes,
pressure,
lift.
You have lift. You have water, you have a lot of different dynamic pressures that
absolutely.
Are
and if you
around.
If you've lost right, and if you've lost control of the car and you hit a hill, now you're airborne.
See? Not necessarily.
Yeah. Okay. See, if I rely on you, Steve, and I take your advice, and I wind up dead, and I wind up dead, and I wind up dead. If I take your advice and I wind up dead, I say to the devil, wherever I go, Steve said,
well, actually,
and I get laughed at by the devil.
The
devil laughs. It
was to advise people who might be taking your advice.
The demon laughs at me.
All right, thanks for your call, sir. 877-876 Phil. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Phil Henry.
Yeah, you can.
When you throw a baby out of a car...
Are you telling me you have never seen people throw babies? I haven't seen them...
I haven't seen anybody throw a baby from a car. I haven't seen any news photographs of people throwing babies out of cars.
I have seen people throwing babies from the windows of burning buildings. There. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
All right. And why are they doing that? Because they don't want the child to die. They have ejected the child from what is a seemingly safe environment into the unknown. And what have they done? They have said that I would rather eject that child into the unknown than to keep that child in this building as it burns down around my ears. And I say the same thing about an automobile. If you have the least bit concern that you have no more control over that car, and that you will not be regaining control over that car, I say take those children that are within your reach and throw them out of the vehicle. Wait for a snowbank. Wait.
And if there's no snowbank?
If there's no snowbank, then why is your car out of control? I don't understand.
Well, you said hydroplaning.
Well, if you're hydroplaning, there's going to be a body of water. I don't understand what you mean by...
What do you mean throw the kid out of... You said hydroplaning, that's water. Where am I going to find a snowbank?
If the car's hydroplaning because of melted water from snow, if that's the case.
And if it's just rain?
All right, Phil, I'll say to you what I said to the other lady. You'll fit yourself with a pair of wings and an innocent baby that hasn't even seen light. You'll fit that kid with wings, and the two of you can play harp. Is that what you want to do?
No, I'm not. I'm saying if... So do you eject the child?
Do I eject the child from what? From a car?
Yes.
If it's out of control?
Yes.
Is there snow around?
No.
No, I wouldn't do it.
Well, then you... Okay. you said there's got to be a body of water.
I don't remember what I said, and if I did, I'm trying to think of what the right thing is to do, Phil. You don't always do the right thing. Sometimes you do the wrong thing. And when you do the wrong thing, maybe you're going to die, but the kid lives. Was that the right thing?
877-876-PHIL. Here is Robert in Durham City, North Carolina. Go ahead, Robert. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
All right. I want to try to make this as polite as possible, but, sir, you are giving out some seriously bad information. When you hydroplane, there's nothing you can do. You've lost control.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. When you hydroplane.
So why would you try to do anything? When you hydroplane, you've lost control. Technological advances like deep roof wheels are trying to prevent hydroplaning. Okay.
Right. All I said is hold the doors on after you go airborne. That's what I said. I don't know when you tuned in. And I said also throw the child out of the car because you don't want the kid in the car when the car explodes. Do you?
Okay, sir. I'm gonna try to be as respectful as possible when I say this.
Wait a minute. You just said to me when the car hydroplanes, it's out of control. And I agree.
Yes, it's out of control. But you do not throw a baby out. You do not grab the doors.
Why not?
By the time you start hydroplaning, it's too late.
Uh-huh.
There's no recovery from it.
I know, so I'm getting the kid out of the car. I don't know if this guy...
The man is saying that by the time you're hydroplaning, the car's out of control. How are you going to throw a kid out of the car?
Well, by out of control, it means the car, I can't recover control. So I'm taking the kid, throwing it into snow, and then I hold onto the doors to make sure they don't fly off.
Okay, you're completely missing the point. Your education from elementary school ain't helping you with this driving stuff, okay? Second point, when you are driving on black ice and you do lose control, guess what? You don't hit the brakes. You steer in the direction that you're skidding, and you try to regain control, okay?
And then leap out of the car.
No, you don't get out of the car. That's stupid.
I didn't say get out. I said leap. You're not going to be able to open the door and step out. But you may have a chance if you do a double roll and a leap.
No. The only way to correct, there's only two ways to correct skidding on black ice, okay?
Are you a driving instructor?
I taught people how to do this, okay? There's only two ways.
The
second one is if you cannot get control of the car, you put it into a snowbank. That's the only two ways.
That's what I said. Right. And what you do with a baby is throw that same baby into that same snowbank so that when the car comes to rest against the snowbank, you've killed an infant. You know, I don't know where you got your education. First of all, when you are hydroplaning...
All right, look, the gentleman made his point. Now you're making yours. I thank you for your call, Robert. 877-876-PHIL. Graham in Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Go ahead, sir.
I'm a union truck driver, 21 years, 22 years without a moving violation. Where is the highway patrol in all of this? If you have black ice on the road, it's illegal to drive on it in any state. The highway patrol won't allow you on the street. Second of all, the highway patrol in any state will not allow you anywhere near a street that's got black ice on it. And if you throw a baby out of the car, that's attempted murder, okay?
All of a sudden you know about the laws regarding murder because you drive a truck? Excuse me.
No.
This guy's
talking about throwing a baby out of a car to save its life. That's attempted murder.
No, it isn't. I'm trying to save the baby from exploding.
Let me keep it short. Okay. I know what I'm talking about. I made my living doing it for 21 years. Stay out of our state. We don't want you. Okay,
you don't know anything about babies from cars.
I have seven children and eight grandchildren. I don't want you anywhere near them.
You're crazy.
Well, you're not the governor. You're not the governor of California, so you don't get to. But I can tell you that infants get thrown from trucks when it's either that or they explode.
Who explodes?
The baby. Not the baby, but the baby. The truck, the baby explodes and the truck hits.
All right, I understand. 877-876-PHIL. Where are we going, man? Frank, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Caroline, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, Caroline. Hi.
Listen, I've been driving along here for about the last 50 miles, traveling to visit family, and I can't believe this conversation. I have my daughter and my puppy in the back seat, and I love animals dearly, but, you know, I got to say, I'd rather kill a fish than throw my child or my puppy out of the car. How did this conversation get this crazy?
Well, I don't think anyone's listening, and perhaps I'm glad you're not listening carefully, Caroline, because you're driving. I'm talking about ejecting a child from a car when the car is out of control and is going to crash. Do you understand? I'm not saying throw the child for laughs out of the car as part of some competition. I'm saying if the infant, if it's either the infant dying in a ball of fire from a gasoline tanker or pitching the kid, and the best way to do it is to hold that child in the air almost like a football. And,
you know,
throw that kid like you're throwing a good hard pass to a tight end. Right into the spot.
You've got one really good point. There are a lot of people that have no idea how to drive in ice and snow. But
exactly. Thank you.
But there are reasons that they treat the roads. They treat the roads to keep people safe. I feel terribly for the fish to die.
You know why people need the roads covered with salt? Because they don't know how to drive. And that's what I'm trying to teach you. So that you don't have to throw your kid out of a car. Because they can salt the road all they want. But when Caroline's car goes out of control, you're going to let that kid sit in the back seat playing when you could pick the kid up and throw it out of the car onto the street?
The idea of throwing a kid onto the street, I don't know, man. Thank you, Caroline, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to take a break. Dean Wheeler with us here as we talk about the idea of throwing a child out of a car. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Thanks to Dean Wheeler, you know, but there's only so much of his kooky ideas that I can take. That's an hour and 45 minutes of that guy talking about pitching babies out of trucks or out of cars or something.
Yeah, but he's pretty right. We got to do it.
Look, at Manny, you think you're going to have time to think, oh, I'm hydroplaning, the car's out of control, I better find a snowbank.
You do have to keep a presence of mind, you know.
You ain't going to keep that much of a presence of mind. The car's hydroplaning, I'm out of control. Let's see, is there a snowbank? Where's the infant? Let me unbuckle the infant from the from the car seat. Let me take the kid. Here comes a snowbank. And then throw the kid like you're throwing to a tight end, is what he...
Well, I'm just saying, you got to pitch it. Pitch it in there. Like it's a hitch pattern.
Get out of here with a hitch pattern. Just drive carefully, folks. That's, you know, whatever. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to go 4 miles an hour. Like here in California, when it rains, everyone believes that it's essentially when it rains in California, people drive as if, as if there's a blizzard. And I think you can do a little bit better than that. But when it is raining and you can't see anything, you might want to put some headlights on. Just regular stuff. I don't know. People have got driver's licenses. Why? I don't have any idea. I know what I had to do to get a driver's license. I had to take a written test, a driver's test, and then I renew every so often. So I suppose after you take the initial driving test, you know.
Yeah, well, you ain't take no drive test, don't know what to do.
And what about old people, man? They make them take. Yeah, they do. They make old people take the test because there's a belief that your skills begin to degrade after a certain point in life, and you have to,
Are you getting that? You're getting to that point, right?
No, man, I ain't getting to that point yet.
Why are you a senior?
What, do I look like my skills are degrading? I probably drive better than either one of you guys. In fact, I know I drive better than you, bud. You went through a tree head first.
Well.
Yeah. Everybody's talking about and watching Bristol Palin's run on Dancing with the Stars, which we'll tell you about here in our news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. But her mother's foray into reality TV has tanked this week. That's right. Ratings for Sarah Palin's Alaska reportedly plummeted for the show's second episode. The show fell 40% on Sunday night to 3 million viewers. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the premiere drew 5 million viewers, setting a ratings record for a TLC show debut. Now, let's first of all take into consideration what 3 million viewers represents for the Learning Channel. It still may be a pretty good number. Only 885,000 of those viewers were in the coveted 18 to 49 age bracket, dropping 44% from last week. So they had over a million last week, 18-49. The report states that the show's median age is 57. Wow, 15 years older than TLC's average. TLC reportedly anticipated the drop, with executives realizing that some of the numbers from the show's premiere were driven by curiosity about the program. Competition from Sunday Night Football and the American Music Awards may also have had an effect on the numbers. That's another thing. These guys know. I mean, it's not exactly coming as a big, big-time shock that the curiosity factor for this show has worn off. So now you take it out of the show and you go, all right, so what's good about it? What's bad about it? Get rid of the bad, keep the good. Although that's the big problem. When people try to agree on what's good about a show, you know, there ain't much agreement. Anyway, according to a network spokesperson, we are very happy with the ongoing strength of Sarah Palin's Alaska. It continues to drive big rating gains for TLC. Also noting that Conan experienced a similar drop after his debut. And not even Bristol Palin's much-talked-about appearance in the Dancing with the Stars finals could help the show that debuted after it, Skating with the Stars. The reality show, which pairs celebrities with pro figure skaters, that is desperate, held on to the dancing audience, couldn't hold on to the dancing audience, only received 11 million viewers from Dancing with the Stars, 23.3 million. Do you think maybe there's a little bit of overkill on just the whole Dancing with a Star thing, man? Do you think that... You know?
Yeah, but it ain't Dancing with the Stars, skating.
Yeah, it's not dancing, it's skating.
What difference does it make, man?
Well, I mean, one is skating.
What difference does it make? Is it figure skating? Is that dancing kind of crap?
What do you mean?
You know what I mean. When they're skating, it's like dance skating, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're doing all them figure skate stuff.
All right, so it's dancing. And instead of dancing, they're skating. So what's the... I mean, it's the same vibe, man. They got the judges, and they have the stars, and this and that.
Yeah, but the better part about it on the skating is that how many stars know how to skate? And another thing, you'll be bitching to see them falling down on the ice and everything, especially on their butt.
Well, okay, great, bud. You hang around for that.
What are you talking about, man?
You hang around for that. You want to see them fall on their ass on the ice, is that it? Well, nobody else did. Now, the whole thing with the Sarah Palin, I told you, I can't watch that. I can't watch these shows that call themselves reality, and in point of fact, there's nothing reality about them. It's improv. It's these are amateurs on camera, and they're performing for the camera. So the Sarah Palin show is, I'm a mom, and here's my family. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not all that compelling. What makes her family any more interesting than anybody else's? As a matter of fact, let me ask a question here, and I say this with all due respect. As a politician, she has a certain, there's an interest factor there. I get it. But just as the subject for a reality TV show, how my family spends its days, and are you trying to tell me that that's how they hang out?
That's a pretty bitching way.
I don't think they hang out that like that. I think that the TLC said, make it look like every weekend you guys are out snowmobiling and hiding from bears. And
maybe that's how they ought to start to live, you know.
If they lived like that, she wouldn't have time to be governor. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, you know, but there's a little bit of a why do you want to be in politics, be president of the United States, Madam Governor, when you've already said you'd rather be out there feeding a grizzly bear, using your firstborn as the bait. I'm kidding.
Oh man, you dare hear about that? That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So that was that. And next hour, we'll tell you what happened to, you know, Bristol on that Dancing with the Stars. Next story, slain publicist Ronnie Chasen feared she was being followed. Get a load of this. Murdered Hollywood publicist Ronnie Chasen reportedly thought she was being followed months before her death, and she may have been the victim of a premeditated professional hit. Chasen suspected this. The 64-year-old was gunned down November the 16th after leaving the after party for the premiere of the Cher and Christina Aguilera movie Burlesque. She was shot five times in the chest around 12:30 in the area of Sunset Boulevard and Whittier Drive.
That ain't Whittier Boulevard.
That ain't Whittier Boulevard, no. And what it is a little side street out on, it's off of Sunset. It's just ahead of the 405 freeway, so it's well past Sunset Strip, and you're on your way to the 405 freeway. Investigators are still looking for leads or motives in the killing. Detectives discovered pieces of shattered glass at an intersection close to where Chasen crashed her car into a light pole. Okay. Residents reported hearing immaculately timed gunshots at the time of the... What does that mean, immaculately timed? Gunshots at the time of the incident, as well as motorcycles traveling around the area the evening before Chasen was killed, possibly in an effort to scout the location. Huh? The mayor of Beverly Hills, Jimmy Delshad, says police have obtained footage from one or perhaps multiple security cameras located at the residence. The property is the home of... I ain't going to repeat the name of this poor woman. She's had this got nothing to do with anything.
Well, who is it?
I ain't saying.
No, come on, man. If she's famous, you got to say it. Because that's like the whole interest in everything.
What do I got to say the name of this lady for? I mean, I said it the other night.
Mr. Hall should weigh in on this.
If you called... Why do I got to... This is a woman who was married to a famous comedian. Is that enough?
No, man. You got to say the name because everybody's interested. That's what makes the story sexy.
An old-time comic? I mean, half the cats listen to this show, man, don't even remember who he is.
You gotta do it.
Well, I ain't doing it until you get Hall to tell me to do it. How about that?
Okay, I'm gonna call him up.
Yeah, call him.
Oh, what a baby, man. You talk about snitch punk. God.
I ain't no snitch punk. You gotta do it on account of it's more interesting.
Anyway, an estimated 1,000 people attended the funeral for Chasen on Sunday. I've got some audio here. This is KTLA News. They say former police officer turned private investigator John Nazarian believes this was a professional hit.
I wasn't peppered with bullets. As a matter of fact, if I had to look at it as a former cop, it almost looks like the crime scene was pretty neat and tidy. When someone thinks they're being followed, first thing you do is you call the police, make some kind of a report. If, in fact, she was being followed and did nothing about it, that could have been fatal.
Let me ask a question. How come if it's such a professional hit, it's done in the middle of a street?
That's a good point.
Why, if this is such a professional hit, you don't wait until there is perhaps, a more opportune moment, like maybe when she pulls into her driveway? I don't know. I don't know that is such a professional job, right smack dab in the middle of Sunset Boulevard as she's making a turn, bam, 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 bam. All right, are dogs smarter than cats, or are cats smarter than dogs? Will the government use body scans for public transportation? We'll answer these questions coming up on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I didn't really do anything to deserve this.
I said, like, I'm like a slut.
It's hour three right now, just trying to get Grammy home from the airport.
Today, the rest of my
life. As this was becoming a bullying thing, that should have come boom. And
you ever smoke, Wolf?
No, not really.
Good adjustments.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and truth is our bitch on this show, man. And it's a bitch, too, you know.
Yeah, yeah, relax, man.
Don't tell me to relax, man. In life, whatever it is you're supposed to do, it's either worth doing right or it ain't worth doing at all. You know, either you're going to do it to the very best ability. What do you mean relax?
Well, y'all yelling and screaming, man, off the air. Like, you're going to get a heart attack, man, when it happened to you, man. You almost died last year.
Yeah, you got to tell people about dying.
I didn't almost die.
Yeah, but you were talking about you weren't sure.
I had pneumonia, man. I had, and as a matter of fact, it's... in another month. What's the date today? What's the date, bud?
The 22/4/24.
Yay, wow.
What?
Well, I got to do, man, say the 24th.
Yeah, that's what I said.
2/4. It's the 24th, right? So that means in a month and 2 days, I will have been off of cigarettes for a full year. And thank you very much. And I gave up cigarettes 2 days, the day after Christmas, because I'll never forget what happened last year. Last year, we had finished doing Phil Hendry's Christmas Carol. We did it the night before Christmas Eve. We took Christmas Eve off, and we took off, we were supposed to take off the week between Christmas and New Year's, and we were going to come back after New Year's. I don't know when it was, but we did our night before Christmas Eve show. We took off Christmas Eve. Christmas Day, I was fine. I seem to remember returning messages, people wishing me happy, Merry Christmas. I was doing the same thing. But I think sometime around Christmas Day, I felt the cough coming on. And that was Friday. And then on Saturday, it was a bad cough. I think that was the 26th. Am I right or wrong? I forget. But in any event, that's when I didn't have a cigarette that day because I just felt my lungs were lousy. Now, that night and the following night, I was in bad shape. Every time I coughed, every single solitary part of my body hurt. There wasn't a square inch of me that didn't hurt. I'd never felt anything like that before in my life. I mean, so that when I coughed, I had to prepare myself for just a shower of pain from the top of my head all the way to the bottom of my feet. And so I began the normal procedure that we all begin. I started taking hot baths. I started treating myself with steam. You know, I tried to fast it out of me. I started to, I don't know what I was doing. And it wasn't getting better.
You should have gone to a doctor on that day.
You're right. I should have, man. I did. I don't know. So now Monday came, and I was a sick animal. I couldn't walk without my vision was blurred, and it didn't occur to me that I had anything worse than a really, really bad flu. I didn't even think that I had swine flu. It never dawned on me. Finally, I don't know how I made it to Thursday. I think what happened was during the day I'd feel a little bit better when I took a bath or when I was taking vitamins and stuff. I couldn't do it anymore, so I had to go to the doctor on Thursday. That was New Year's Eve. That's who I held out till. And I went over to my doctor, Dr. Alt, who is fantastic. He's one of the greatest, man. Here in Ventura County, Dr. Alt is this old guy. He's a little guy, and he's like no bullcrap, man. This dude just, you know. He said to me, he said, I've seen 24 people today. You're the sickest guy I've seen. I said, you mean my material on the air? Well, that just sucks. No, he said.
Did he really?
No, he didn't. He said, you're the sickest guy that I've seen. So I said, Doc, I'm in bad. He says, I know you are. So that's when he began. He took my temperature. I had 103 degree temperature. I had no idea. I didn't, it's been so long since I was really sick. You know, the last time I was really, really, really sick, I got to tell you, it was probably when I was a kid when I had the measles or something. I have been a very fortunate guy, and I've never been in a hospital, at least up until last year. So he said, you got 103 degree temperature. So he began shooting me with antibiotics. I mean, I had a needle stuck in my rear end. I had it on the other side of my rear end. I had it on my arms. He's taking my blood. He's this, he's that. And I'm laying there, and I am sick. I was there for 4 hours in his office as he was he put that nebulizer, that mask.
Yeah, it looks like steam or something.
Right. He had that on me. He was checking the oxygen content of my blood, you know, and he said to me, all right, Phil, I'm going to send you home. And the next day was New Year's Day. He said, I'm going to call you tomorrow. And he did. He called me every 2 hours because he was really worried. He said, how you doing? I said, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. He gave me a bunch of antibiotics. He gave me Tamiflu up the rear, which, by the way, I got to send some to Jace. He gave me Tamiflu coming out of my ears, man. But it was too late. It was too late. The Tamiflu was way too late. He said, and I want to see you on Saturday. That was January the 2nd. This is last year. And by the time I got over to his office I should have had somebody drive me. I had Alex drive me to the doctor on Thursday. I don't know how I made it to the doctor's on Saturday because I almost fainted when I got out of the car. And they told me to come in the back entrance of the office, so I stood there like an idiot. And then they said, why didn't you come in the front door? Because it says go in the back door, man. And the idea of going around to the front door was, so I stood there waiting for them to open this door, and in the meantime, almost fainting.
What do you mean almost fainted?
I mean, I began to black out. And it had to have been the fact that there was no oxygen getting into my blood by this point, right? So Susie, who's a friend of mine, Dr. Alt called Susie, and she comes over. He says he's got to go to the hospital. And by this point, I'm like, fine, great. I feel so bad, man. I'll do anything to feel better. So that's what happened. And she drove me over there to St. John's Medical Center in Ventura County. The best, just the best. And I, you know, I'm the grumpiest, most cranky patient in the world. And I don't know how they put up with me because I was just all, you know, what are you guys waking me up for? I was probably the biggest pain in the ass, but what a great hospital. Anyway, she's like, I had never checked myself into a hospital before. So Susie's there, like almost like I'm on a leash. She goes, all right, come over here. And all I'm doing is standing like a big dumbass with my insurance cards. And these guys checked me into a room that night, man. And it was the weirdest experience because I'm down there in the emergency, area where they're, you know, letting people in. And there's drug addicts down there and they're walking around and I'm laughing my ass off at them. And that's how sick I was. And they finally got me up into a room and then they moved me down to the, I don't know where the hell the lung room, you know, the lung ward, you know.
Where they treat people with a lung, with lung.
Yeah, where they treat people with lung.
What do you mean lung, man? Like lung problem.
Right. And that's where I was, and that's where I stayed. And now it was a very interesting thing because I didn't know really when I'd get out of there. And every time I asked the doctor, I said, well, what is wrong? He says, you have pneumonia. You got double pneumonia, Phil. And it's a tsunami, he said to me. He says, it's a tsunami. It will wash over you, but we don't know how big it is and when it will end. But it's an event. And I said, okay. But I'll tell you something, man. They had me on extra oxygen. They had me getting a blood test it seemed like every 4 hours. They had me x-rayed, my lungs x-rayed every day, it seemed like. In fact, one night, I'll never forget it, these two blonde angels. I must have had a bad fever. I couldn't have had a fever by then. I think I was okay. But these two blondes walk into my room, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah. And they're all dressed in their green x-ray gear. And it's just these two blonde chicks moving me around and propping me up and x-raying me. And then, then they vanished. And I never did get their names or, you know.
Maybe he was hallucinating that part. It's possible.
No. This is real. These are real people.
Nah, you could be right, man.
They're real people. I wasn't hallucinating. The bad fever I had like days before, I was fine. It was just weird. And I told you, I met people in this hospital this week. There were guys, the doctors are coming in. This guy says to me, Phil, I listened to your show when I was taking my medical exam. Phil, I listened to your show when I was studying for my doctorate. Phil, I listened to your show when I was getting my physical therapy. I had three or four people coming in, and a couple of them people that were treating me, which was a trip. This guy, he's a cardiologist. He says, I listened to you while I was in medical school. And I said to him, that doesn't make me feel good because that means you were concentrating on like, you know.
Bobby Dooley or something.
Yeah, Bobby Dooley. And you don't know what you're doing. And he's like, ha, 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 ha. So that was that. And all these days go by. We can't tell you when you're leaving. We can't tell you when. Then finally comes this doctor, Dr. Edwards. He comes in. He's wearing the mask. He's got on this long gown. He has the rubber gloves on. And you know how doctors hold their hands when they have their gloves on? It's like they crook one hand and they fit the other hand into it, like one hand under and one hand on top. And he says, I'm Dr. Edwards. And he was very officious. And he says, and let me just tell you, you know. And he says, we believe that you have swine 1N1, which morphed into pneumonia, which and we also think you have valley fever. And he just laid out all the stuff. And God, man, all that, huh? And it was finally Saturday. And he said to me, and I think we can check you out today at 2 o'clock. I'm like, oh, thank God. Because I didn't, as good as those people were, I had to get out of there. I had to get out of there.
Yeah, I know. You had to get better food, right?
Well, look, hospital food is hospital food. Everybody complains about it. But around midweek, I called Alex. I said, man, you got to get me some Pollo Loco.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I said, you got to go get me some, man. Well, I don't know. Please, man, you got to get me Pollo Loco. I don't care what you got to do. I don't care who you got to kill. Well, okay. He came over with a bucket of that. Man, you should have called me. I'll bring a Pollo Loco. Oh, no, 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 no. I got to bother you, man. So anyway, make a long story short, I got out of there and came home. And that was a week after I was supposed to be back on the air. And I was still a mess. And it took me another week of being back, of just laying around the house until I was able to get back on the air. And when I finally got back on the air, I'll never forget my first night back. It was a great show. And I don't know how it was a great show because I was still on oxygen. And I had to take oxygen and the tube. And I didn't have the strength to carry the oxygen tank into the studio with me. I dropped the tube down the stairs and dragged the tube all the way into the studio so that during a break, I'd sit there sucking on oxygen.
Yeah, but were you still sick?
I must have been. That first night back on the air, I was sweating like a pig. I had a big beach towel with me wiping the sweat off of me. And for the whole week, I sweat like an animal. But it was a great week of shows, and I gradually started feeling better. I'd say, like, the end of that week, I was feeling good. I mean, I don't even think, I'm going to be honest with you, it took me months, man, to get back up to 100%. You ever get pneumonia, you will not get over it for months. Months. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't walk. I'm telling you, you think that it's pneumonia is just a bad cold. It's something more, man. It's a whole assault on everything that you are or ever will be. Whatever you think you are physically, pneumonia will beat the crap out of that, man, and tell you, guess what? You're starting all over again.
The first guest you had on when you come back, I got it right here, with Doug Danger, David Hall, and Emery Clayton.
Yeah.
Those are the first ones back?
Yeah. We have that as a best of one time.
Probably. That was back on, what was the date, man? That must have been like January 16th, something like that. All right, so that's that story. Coming back, Twitter tirades test the limits of freedom of speech. That's a kind of an opinion piece, but an interesting thing there. TSA, some government officials to skip airport security. How dare they? And, oh, TSA workers face a tough job. Headbutted, punched, kicked, and shoved. It's an interesting story considering that we had on last night Art Griego saying the same thing. It's another life-imitating Phil segment on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Coming up, a story about this guy, Michael Brea. Perhaps we should do the story now. I think we ought to do the story now.
You're going to talk about a Twitter tirade and everything.
I'll talk about Twitter tirades later. This story is, well, it's screaming to be told, and that's what he was doing, screaming Bible passages. Michael Brea, Michael L. Brea, a Haitian-born actor, before he killed his mother with a samurai sword.
Oh, man.
It was in Brooklyn, New York. Police say the Ugly Betty actor held his mother hostage and then decapitated her with a samurai sword while screaming Bible passages. Let's see. The other news we of this story, neighbors identified the suspect as Haitian-born Michael Brea. He's also had roles in the movie Set Up 3D. He was also the face of a campaign for the energy drink Coca-Cola Full Throttle. Neighbors say, yeah, I'll bet. And I shouldn't.
You should make no joke about it.
Oh, let me write that down, though.
Yeah, huh? Anyway, neighbors on the first and third floors of the 501 Park Place in Prospect Heights heard screams coming from the apartment on the second floor at about 1:30 a.m. on Tuesday. I hear the brother chasing his mother through the house, and he's just saying a bunch of Bible passages like repent, 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 said neighbor George Clare.
What do you mean by brother?
That's what he's calling him. He's black.
He's a black guy.
Oh.
Anyway, when responding officers arrived, they encountered the mentally disturbed 31-year-old Brea. He was very combative toward the first responders who had to taser the man in order to subdue him. Ugly Betty actor Michael Brea killing his mother. Here is Gregory Clare and Bernard Brent live in the building that Michael Brea lives in. They speak to WPIX-TV about what they heard.
I hear brother chasing it through the house, and he's just saying a bunch of like passages, like he's like, repent, 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 chasing it through the house, you know. And I hear a loud scream, like we hear the scream. So I have my father call the cops or whatever, call 911.
I had just dozed off to go to sleep, and then I woke up to somebody screaming, and it sounded like a lady voice. And then after a while, I just didn't hear the woman's voice again.
Officers described this crime scene as extremely bloody, where the victim was discovered and immediately pronounced dead.
Do you think, ma'am?
I know, but they have to do it technically.
You gotta pronounce him dead. What's so big about that?
She ain't got no head, you know.
Yeah, so you go over and say, okay, she's dead, and then you sign it and everything.
Well, I don't know if they did that either, bud, but you're right. The medical examiner and the people, the coroner, and they have to make it official, you know. You know that New York, and this is a little bit off point, New York is the city that gave us the office of the medical examiner. Before New York, they had coroners. But they didn't have medical examiners, and I'm saying they, I mean the cities of America. Before the city of New York had a health department and a medical examiner and a professional coroner, we had clowns that were running medical departments for cities around this country that used to be barbers, they used to be shoeshine guys. They didn't know their ass from a hole in the ground.
About how to pronounce people dead?
Well, you do need that. You have to make a record. Why did this person die? And they had, in New York City, they had, like, might have fallen off of a horse or was run over by a, you know, they didn't have any real. And so New York City, at the turn of the century, decided we can't keep doing this. We got to, you know, so they got a medical examiner, a professional, a doctor, and a coroner. And every single solitary death certificate from that point forward was very professionally done. What was the cause of death? Well, it was thus and so. And American cities began to follow suit. Because before that, we had no real quality record keeping. We'd say, literally, if you looked at a death certificate in New York City just before they did this, it would say it could be cirrhosis of the liver or maybe he fell out of a tree. Honest, I swear to God.
Well, what kind of jackball going to do that?
That's how they obviously didn't take it very seriously. It didn't matter. And it was also an office that was politically abused. You know, oh, I'm the medical examiner. I can do. I don't know what the hell they could get being the medical examiner, but that's what happened. So they have to do it right, bud, you know. And
No, Robert's the guy.
Or I mean Robert. They got to do it right.
Yeah, but if you walk over to say, I'm going to pronounce her dead now. Oh, okay. She don't have no head.
Well, don't keep saying that, man. They have to do it right. Anyway, several sources to the closest to the investigation told Channel 11 that Brea used a samurai sword. Oh, God. The Phil Henry Show will be right back with that Twitter tirade and free speech and all that here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. PhilHenryShow.com, by the way, is our website. Visit us. Watch the video.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Right here.
I know, bud. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry. You're saying what I said, right?
Yeah, you're right about it.
What I said was Dancing with the Stars. You know, I don't know that this happened, but Dancing with the Stars, it's too simple to say that, you know, ABC is somehow influenced by the Palin family, and that's why they're keeping Bristol Palin. I mean, what influences ABC and what influences all of these networks is viewership, and that means advertising, and that means money. That's what influences them, not Sarah Palin. And obviously they had a really, really big number for this Bristol Palin Dancing with the Stars competition, so that they ensured that she is on the show through the finale of tonight, which is now last night. And therefore, it doesn't matter who wins, as long as the viewers are there. And sure enough, tonight, the winner was Jennifer Grey, right? From, what the hell was the movie that she was in, man? Jennifer Grey was in Dirty Dancing. She was the winner. Bristol Palin didn't win, but who cares? Because ABC won the night. They had 23.3 million viewers. So, the viewership is guaranteed.
I'll say that again.
I ain't going to go through it again, man.
What do you mean? That why weren't they influenced by what was the lady?
Sarah Palin. Look, man, they care about one thing, money. Sarah Palin has got no amount of power that's going to make ABC do anything that they don't want to do. Now, what they wanted to do is they wanted to have viewers. They got it. Bristol Palin was a home run. Doesn't matter who wins, you know.
Do you think that they made her lose?
I don't know. I honestly don't, but I can tell you this. It didn't matter tonight because the viewers were locked in. There they were, and they were going to hang around until the end. So let me just get to this, all right, man? If you don't understand, Robert, I'll explain it to you after the show. How about that? Well, what's this?
This is what happened on the night you come back.
Oh, here it is. Phil's pneumonia. I came back in the first hour. I told the story. Then David Hall... David Hall came on and said that I should lie and talk about death rumors. Then the Golden Globes, the 2009, and Avatar-induced depression. Then in hour two, Margaret Gray said that we should all donate at least $500 to Haiti or we're racists. And then finally, in the last hour, Bob Green stole Haitian relief funds because customers just want to feel good and it doesn't matter what happens to the money. That was the night we came back.
Yeah, Bob Green was pretty funny.
It was great. All right. 8 o'clock, ABC. What is this, Jason? This is Monday night. This Monday night? Tuesday night. Then that would be Monday. That's what I was said. Wasn't Dancing with the Stars on Tuesday night? Okay. All right. So Monday night, they won the night with 23 million. Fox second with 9 million. Look at how it kicked Fox's ass. CBS was third with How I Met Your Mother, 9 million. NBC's Chuck, 4.5 million. The CW, 90210 rerun, 885,000. In the 9 o'clock hour, Dancing with the Stars killed. And then they had a Skating with the Stars premiere, 15.2 million. I think that's very weird that they throw that number in there, so it doesn't mean anything, and I'm sorry that I actually read that to you, because I can't decipher what that's supposed to mean. 2.5 Men in 9 o'clock hour, Mike and Molly. Get this crap out of here. If I can't read, you know, we're going to have to figure a way, man, to put these ratings together so human beings understand them. Otherwise, I'm going to stop reading them. There's no point, man.
Well, I try to do it the right way.
What does it mean, man, when Dancing with the Stars and Skating with the Stars and they both have 11 million and, you know, who's getting what? God. Twitter tirades test limits of freedom of speech. What's a tweet between friends? Well, the law says sometimes it's a threat. One man thought he was just bantering with his pals when he joked about blowing an airport sky high. Another was reacting to a radio phone-in when he mused about stoning a journalist to death. Because they made their throwaway comments on Twitter, both are in legal trouble. Their cases have outraged civil libertarians and inflamed the debate about the limits of free speech in a web world. The internet increasingly makes private jokes, tastes, and opinions available for public consumption, blurring the line between public and private in a way that has left the law struggling to keep up. This is the worst written story among the thousands that we use on this show. This is the worst written thing I've ever seen. According to Gregory Pryor, some dumbass who works for Reed Smith in London, well, that's applicable. I think people don't have any idea of the potential legal ramifications of things they post on the internet. Oh, so you mean there are legal ramifications? I thought you said that the line was blurred. Anything you post on Twitter can come back and haunt you. Really? So then it isn't blurred. Paul Chambers found out with a vengeance. The 27-year-old trainee accountant was convicted and fined about tweeting in January that he'd blow up Robin Hood Airport in northern England if his flight was delayed. Chambers, who lost his job and faces several thousand pounds in legal costs, said Monday that he's instructed his lawyers to take his case to the high court, setting the stage for a major test of free speech online. Probably to the detriment of my mental well-being, I'm appealing the decision as best I can, Chambers tweeted on Monday. Well, brother, how about using another example of what it is that you want to do? How about you'll blow yourself up? Chambers is already an online cause celeb after he lost an appeal earlier this month. Thousands of Twitter users repeated his offending message. Robin Hood Airport is closed. You've got a week. Otherwise, I'm blowing the airport sky high. Well, then it becomes free speech because it's obviously not to be taken seriously. It's a form of sarcastic, satirical speech in support of a particular political point of view. That's not hard. They added the tag, I am Spartacus, a reference to the 1960 movie epic in which the titular hero's fellow rebels all assume his identity as a gesture of solidarity. So this goes along with what we've been talking about, that people think that the Internet is the Wild West. And as long as we have the Internet, then it's the Wild West. You can go out and do anything you want. You can say anything you want. You can steal anything you want. You can be anything you want. And it's the Internet. It's a really juvenile point of view. It's the way children think. And I'm not saying it's because there's a lot of young users. I'm thinking that there are so many people on the Internet who got this message somehow that there's no law out there. The Internet is wide open. No, it isn't. International law, international agreements have been drawn up between nations to strengthen copyright protection, for instance. There are people who have been sentenced to prison for copyright violation. And you cannot, no matter where, slander or libel somebody. That means say thus and so that injures someone's reputation. Now, when it comes to threats, well, we live in a day and age where every nervous, hand-wringing grandmother is worried that we didn't notice the warning signs. You know, he busted into that school and shot people. What were the warning signs? And to think that he posted this on Internet and on Twitter, and we didn't say anything.
Yeah, but you can't every single thing what a guy says.
Well, all right, man, I guess we shouldn't. But if we don't, and then that guy goes and shoots somebody up, then we say, oh, look at this. The guy was giving us, that was a warning sign.
Yeah, okay. So what are you saying, man? You saying like the guy that did Columbine, they were kidding?
No, I'm not saying they were kidding. Those kids that did Columbine, they were online. They were serious, dude. All right? We're not talking about kids now, though, who act out, who are childish, who are nervous, angry, scared. We're talking about adults in a world of airplanes blowing up and buildings falling down. And a guy coming on and saying, I'm going to blow the airport up. I don't know. What do you think? If you were flying out of that airport that day and that cat had just said that, what would you think?
I wouldn't care at all, man. I'd fly on an airplane and everything.
No, you wouldn't. You'd be squirting a few.
What do you mean squirting a few?
Hold on. You're serious. You'd go to the airport and you'd feel good.
I mean, I'd like them to check it out, you know.
Well, how are they going to check that out?
You can call the guy up and question him and everything.
Oh, okay. So we have law and Twitter, you know, do you think Twitter cares? So Twitter's got a security apparatus in place where if something is tagged or flagged as potentially threatening, Twitter will isolate it, call the police. Police will go and interview the guy. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah. Don't they have something like that?
I don't know what Twitter's got. I don't know how many people work for them. I don't know if they got anybody there that even gives a damn whether there's people threatening people. I don't know whether it's anything that Twitter wants to fool with. I don't know that Twitter wouldn't join this guy in his lawsuit. It's a lot easier and a lot more financially, you know, rewarding. The fewer people that you have on staff, the less of the overhead, the more money you make. I don't know how they make their money at Twitter, but...
Well, they make people pay for them trending topic and everything.
Oh, yeah. All right. So in any event... That's where that was at. To many Twitizens, the outrage is obvious. Chambers has no threat, was no threat to anyone, just a frustrated traveler blowing off steam. It's worrying, said Evan Harris, a former British lawmaker and free speech campaigner. The judgment seemed to misunderstand that something said across Twitter was not a serious threat. How do you know that, man? This is not the mode of choice for any suicidal jihadist. How do you know that? Who is speaking? Evan Harris, a former British lawmaker and free speech campaigner. Wow. I mean, that's true, but there's all kinds of people that use Twitter, you dumbass. He says it's like a chat in a pub. Well, no, it isn't, because in a pub, I can pretty much spot, you know, anybody that looks like Bin Laden.
Yeah, but you're going to be in a business suit.
There is sarcasm in the pub, he said. There is sarcasm on Twitter, which is understood by everyone on Twitter, but not by that judge, of course. Let me tell you something, Evan Harris, you dumbass. I don't know about Twitter, but I was on Facebook one night when I saw some broad on there saying she wanted to shoot Sarah Palin. Okay, that's how much she hated her, and she's some drunk broad, 3 o'clock in the morning on Facebook, right? So I went ahead and reported her to Facebook. I said, hey, she's making threats to a public official. I don't give a damn if she is kidding. I could care less. Now, what, you tell me I shouldn't take that seriously? Well, okay, I don't take it seriously. I reported her just because I didn't like her.
Well, what's that mean, man? You don't like her?
I don't like anybody talking like that. How do you feel about that, huh?
Yeah, now you're infringing on our freedom of speech. Well, she has a right to say that.
Oh, she does she? Well, I say no, she doesn't. And even if she does, I went ahead and reported her anyway because she was an ugly bitch. How about that?
Well, you ain't good looking.
I know I'm not good looking. What are you guys? What happened to you guys? So anybody can get on Facebook or Twitter and say anything. Is that it?
No.
How about if I get on there and talk about your mother? Would you like that?
Talk about my mother about what?
I don't care. You wouldn't like it. Another ill-fated tweeter has received less sympathy from Chambers. Gareth Compton, a conservative counselor in the English city of Birmingham, was arrested this month on suspicion of sending off an offensive or indecent message after tweeting an invitation for a journalist to be stoned to death, a comment he insists was a joke. The subject of his tweet, newspaper columnist Yasmin Ali Baba, whatever the hell, Brown, reported him to police. Well, wait a minute, maybe he was only kidding. He was arrested and questioned, but he has not been charged. He later released an apology for his ill-conceived attempt at humor. Sympathy for Compton was relatively muted. Liberal Twitterites may have felt less comfortable supporting a Tory who'd attacked a Muslim woman. Well, now, what's that about? So this other guy can talk about blowing up an airport, but this guy talks about stoning somebody to death. That ain't cool, huh? But according to Evan Harris, who says that it's all pub chat, Compton's arrest is equally unfair. He said Compton's message, can someone please stone Yasmin Ali Baha Brown to death? I shan't tell Amnesty if you don't, was obviously not a serious menace. I don't know how they find these things out. All right, we'll be back with our final segment here on the Phil Hendry Show, the TSA agent's campaign of getting punched, kicked, and headbutted. Plus, the Vatican charges or changes their tune on condom use. PhilHendryShow.com, our website. We'll be right back.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
TSA workers face a tough job, headbutted, punched, kicked, and shoved. This is what we call life imitates Phil. Last night we had on Art Griego, who said that, well, you know, the TSA workers have got no great shakes. You may not like being patted down, but they don't like patting you down. You know, people may not like being body scanned, but they don't like looking at you in those body scanners. So guess what? Today, the story from Tampa, Florida, they've been called molesters, they've been threatened with physical violence, they've been ordered not to touch, quote, my junk. One woman headbutted a TSA officer who was searching her laptop. Other screeners report being punched, kicked, and shoved during pat-downs. However, security officers performing increasingly invasive searches say they want Thanksgiving travelers to know they're doing their jobs and trying to save lives. Even though the agents face some considerable stress from passengers, they're determined to keep the traveling public safe, said Sari Koshetz, a TSA spokeswoman in Tampa. To be sure, most passengers are docile when going through an airport security checkpoint. But Ricky D. McCoy, who's the lead transportation officer and president of Local 777 Illinois and Wisconsin, which is a union for the TSA workers, said the atmosphere has changed in the last 2 weeks. Last week, for instance, McCoy explained the search to a passenger, the guy looked me straight in the face and said, I don't know what I might do to you if you touch me. McCoy assured the man he would not be abused and then stared the man down and told him touching him would be the worst mistake he's ever made because authorities would be called. The search went smoothly. So these two guys, this guy had been threatened, and so he had to turn around and look him back in the face and say, you know, you put a hand on me, and guess what? You're going away, too. And this is insane. And I think that a lot of the freedom some people feel in threatening TSA workers and telling them don't touch me and telling them they're going to get their ass kicked and telling them all of these things, I have to be honest with you, has been promulgated by this medium I work in.
Oh, man, you gotta blame talk radio and all the stuff what's done.
I'm telling you, I've heard enough, and there are enough people to listen to talk radio. Let me put it to you this way, and I'd say it with all due respect. There are enough dummies that listen to talk radio that take their instruction from it, that when they hear their favorite host say, the sky is green today, pass it on, that's what they're going to do, that they'll go in and they will, get up in the kisser of somebody that's trying to do their job. Man, this is the law. You don't want to fly, don't fly. I don't know what to say. I mean, I wish that we would be more aggressive when it comes to looking at certain suspect types. I wish that, that were the case, as opposed to being, oh, well, we've got to be egalitarian with this whole, now, so everybody's going to get searched, even though you know full damn well, if you're a cop, if your job has been to investigate these kinds of crimes, and your job has been to recognize possible suspects, possible perpetrators, this is your job, this is your career, this is your profession, but you're not allowed to do that because it's going to bum some people out. So instead, because it's going to bum people out and piss people off, that's exactly right. So instead, you have to deal with this eventuality, which is searching every mother's son going through the joint. And I can imagine it's frustrating. It's frustrating for the travelers and for the cops. I mean, I can't even, for any cop who has to actually, you know, go out and investigate these crimes or arrest these people. McCoy assured the man he would not be abused. But about 10 minutes later, the guy's wife came back and apologized for what he had said. Get that. The new pat-downs began about a month ago, and there was one assault on an officer early on. Since the story made headlines, McCoy said, there have been at least six incidents where officers were punched, pushed, or shoved after officers explained what would be happening. In one case, he said a passenger headbutted an officer as he looked at her laptop. He blamed TSA for the uproar, saying the agency didn't reach out to passengers enough. TSA's officers have received 8 to 12 hours of training on the pat-down procedures, Cochette said. Training on the scanning machines is a three-day process that requires on-the-job training. She said the agents must pass their tests each year and requalify for their job. So despite the occasional outburst, many passengers are forgiving. So that's what I suspect.
I don't even think it's all that big of a deal. I think they make a big deal about three guys or something.
Yeah, but what about, I mean, how would you feel, man, if somebody's sticking his finger in your butt?
Nobody's sticking their finger. You know, what a weird thing to say, man. Have you heard of that happening?
I don't know.
Well, why don't you get some facts, dude? Get some facts as opposed to just going off, you know, all freaked out about what you think's going to happen. Despite the occasional outburst, many passengers are forgiving. I personally wouldn't want to be patted down, said 29-year-old Relena McLaughlin, an Army reservist from Orlando who had a layover Tuesday in Atlanta. But I think the security people are just doing their jobs. They have a service job, so they have to do what they're told to do. Valeria Lewis, a transportation security officer and president of AFGE Local 555, which covers Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and South Carolina, hasn't heard of officers encountering problems with passengers in her region. Most of the passengers are cooperative. The collective unease of many Americans over possible invasion of privacy, intimate touching, and so forth have led to a near instant backlash. Well, we'll see. We're going to take a break. I mean, we're going to take a 24-hour break is what we're taking.
Yeah.
Our show is produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wagon, and our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. And don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com, live streaming video. Get a backstage pass. Listen to thousands of hours of you-know-what. Archive material from thousands and thousands of hours of show material. philhenryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.